Blog Talk Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts and put your foot on the gas. The Red Light Sports Network presents the Red Light Sports Ramble.
They say it's cool and that, but I don't. They probably don't really think it's that cool.
With Troy Otradovic.
He is really good.
And Evan Witalison.
He's awesome.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Red Light Sports Ramble. I am Troy Otradovic, joined by the spectacular Evan Witalison out in the great state of Wisconsin. What's going on today, buddy?
Not a whole lot, just another great day. We have a guest that we're waiting to call in. Jim Ozarski covers the Cincinnati Bengals for the Inquirer in Cincinnati. He's going to be joining us, talk about the training camp so far for the Bengals, waiting for him to join. Speaking of training camp, if you have been on Eddie Lacy's Twitter account or Facebook page, you saw a picture of him recently at training camp for the Packers, sitting in the dorm room doing some of his 22-minute hardcore. So Eddie Lacy is still doing some Tony Horton stuff to stay right for the Packers season and training camp. So we do have our guest calling in. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome our guest, Jim Ozarski, covered the Bengals with the Inquirer. How you doing, Jim?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Good. So I did pronounce the name right, I hope, right?
You did.
Oh, awesome. So thank you for coming on. I got Troy here with me. And we wanted to get you on to talk about some Cincinnati Bengals, what's going on. So obviously the past couple years for the Bengals have pretty much ended the same way, early playoff exits. I think it's been like since 1990 or something like that since they won a playoff game. And now this year, a lot of promise going in, even with the wide receiver position that got hit pretty hard in free agency. Just kind of wanted to get your take on the Bengals and see if you feel this could be the year that they end that playoff route. But so far, how has Cincinnati been looking like in training camp? What stood out to you?
Yeah, it's a, it's kind of the same old here, which for at least if you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan, it's a little frustrating because, you know, Marvin Lewis, the second longer tenured head coach in the NFL behind only Bill Belichick. And obviously there are no rings to go with that. The core is the same, guys. I mean, Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson and Geno Atkins have been here since 2010. Andy Dalton, A.J. Green since 2011. That offensive line has been together now. So it's relatively boring camp, to be honest. I wish I could tell you it was exciting that there were big things happening, but even though there's been some coaching turnover, some player turnover, when your core pieces and your head coach – are still the same and have been for half a decade, which is like a lifetime in the NFL for some of these players. It's just kind of chugging along. they hope doing the same thing over and over will eventually lead to a different result. And I know that's sometimes the definition of insanity, but that they're hoping that this year that's the case.
Yeah, Jim, this is Troy, and I'm going to just not to get off point, but I like you already because you have one of those names. My last name is Otradovic, and so when Evan told me you're coming on the show, I'm like, I got to like the guy. He's got one of those last names that, you know, look at that's kind of weird. But when you look at this Bengals team, Jim, you know, the big knock has been on Andy Dalton that he can get it done in the regular season, and he just can't win the big game in the postseason. So as you look at training camp so far, and what I've seen is he's looking good again. But, you know, as you cover the Bengals, you know, the success in the regular season, why hasn't it carried over so much to the postseason?
Yeah, and that's the million-dollar question, to be honest. It's they thought that change was going to happen last year. I mean, here's a guy, the Bengals were 10-2. He was in that MVP conversation quite legitimately with Tom Brady and Cam Newton. Heading into that Pittsburgh game when he broke his thumb. And I'll be honest, guys, I mean, they'd already beaten Pittsburgh once. I really feel that this Bengals team would have run the table those final 4 weeks of the season and finished 14-2. And maybe this is a different conversation coming off a bye, but that didn't happen.
So I actually did a long profile on Andy. I went to Fort Worth, to his home in Texas. You can read that at Cincinnati.com. And really, he feels, and a lot of people in the organization feel, that last year was the leap year, if you will. His fifth in the league, 29 years old, or 28 at the time, entering his prime. Kind of all the signs are pointing towards what you just said happening. And then it was sort of taken from him. So this year's going to be an interesting one, guys, because Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu got paid this offseason. They went to other teams. So now there's Brandon LaFell, a journeyman, a rookie, and Tyler Boyd, where they're counting on Andy Dalton to lift them up. I mean, Packers fans have seen it with Aaron Rodgers, where you look at some of the guys that he's thrown passes to that have gone elsewhere and what have they done, or some guys that he's had over the years and what they've done with him. They think Andy Dalton's to that point. Honestly, guys, until he plays 16 games and gets to January, it's really hard to answer because he's been to Pro Bowls. He's put up good numbers. It's sort of that cloud hanging over their head, and that can't be answered until January.
There's a wide receiver you brought up I want to ask you about, the rookie, Boyd. Now, he had a very, successful career at Pitts, fell a little bit in the draft. How's he been looking in camp this year? And has he been pushing LaFell a little bit for that number two spot opposite AJ Green?
Yeah, it's interesting, guys. You know, he has made a flash play, I'd have to say, every practice. I mean, maybe two out of the last 11 days in training camp, he hasn't had something that made you go, wow, which as a rookie is saying something. Definitely, I mean, he's drafted in the second round for a reason, and he's sort of shown that. It's interesting because that's a big question Bengals fans have, guys, is pushing Brandon LaFell or replacing him. And here's the way I look at that. Brandon LaFell in the Bengals offense is a perfect fit on the outside. So there's A.J. Green. There's Brandon LaFell. Tyler Boyd's in the slot. Now, Tyler's not a small guy. He's a big guy. But I think Andy Dalton's going to determine if Tyler Boyd gets more targets, if he gets more catches, right? So what is that? Is he then the number two, but he's in the slot? You know what I mean? It's an interesting dynamic, the way people view that. But now there is some thought that once the Bengals go to two wide receiver sets, Tyler Boyd can be that guy. He could. His talent is amazing. He's very fast. Will he supplant, LaFell in those specialized packages? Maybe. But you guys know, this is a passing league. They're going to roll out there with three wide receivers. And if Tyler Boyd happens to catch five passes a game and LaFell catches two, then he's the number two, right? he's just not on the outside. So it's however you want to look at it schematically, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim, I'll tell you what, I am born and raised in Green Bay, but I reside out in Pittsburgh now. So I had a chance to follow Boyd at Pitt. And I'll tell you what, I think he's a special player. I think this guy's going to be one heck of an NFL receiver. You talk about those wild plays. I mean, even in college, at times he looked like a man among boys at that position. Now, I know going to college to the pros, I mean, he's on equal playing ground. But I think this is a guy, just from what I've read and followed, that he's going to work hard, and I think this is a guy that's going to get on the field. Like you said, they're going to roll out three receiver sets, and I think Tyler Boyd's going to be on the field. And early season bold prediction by me, he could be a guy that could be in the NFL Rookie of the Year talk. I really think that highly of him. I thought that was a great pick in round two by the Bengals. They needed help at wide receiver. And I think they got great talent. So staying there on the offensive side at running back, I mean, it's been kind of are they going to go again kind of running back by committee, or are they going to try to give the majority of carries to one guy or another? Are they going to kind of mix it up like they did last year a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting, guys, because you look at 2 years ago, and you had Jeremy Hill, or Giovanni Bernard was a starter. Jeremy Hill kind of comes in during an injury and pushes himself into that Rookie of the Year conversation. So that spins into 2015, where Jeremy Hill is the talk of the NFL, and could he be, I mean, one of the conversations we had at Cincinnati.com was could he be an all-pro type? Could he even ascend above even the Pro Bowl level? And then what happens? You know, he had a kind of a knee injury, not enough to make him miss games, but it affected him. He had the fumble issues in the regular season. He was benched. Gio Bernard comes in, and that's not a surprise. He was a former starter and averaged has a career year in yards per touch. So here we are in 16. I'm building that for a reason, because Giovanni Bernard just gets a $16 million contract extension. He's the 10th highest paid running back in the National Football League for a guy who, for all intents and purposes, is not your number one running back, who is going to split carries. So they're going to do what they did a year ago with the expectation Jeremy Hill performs like he did 2 years ago. Who starts? I don't know. I mean, they tried to make Jeremy Hill feel that way last year by running him out there on those first plays. I don't know if Ken Zampezi is going to have the same philosophy Hugh Jackson did in that regard, but they're going to get the same amount of touches. And honestly, if it's one of those games where Jeremy Hill's running 4.5 yards a carry and he's feeling it, they're going to roll with it. And if not, then Gio Bernard's going to come in and catch a couple passes and you know, get out in space and hopefully in their eyes, average 5.5 yards a touch. It's not the answer fantasy fans want to hear for sure. It's not the answer some, you know, traditionalists want to hear, but in this NFL, guys, and you know this, you know, even with the Eddie Lacy situation up there, teams aren't going to run a guy, you know, 300 times anymore. And really, I think they feel the best way to maximize it is to split touches between Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. They feel that's the best way to keep the offense rolling and rack up a lot of yards on the ground.
I want to jump to the defensive side of the football really quick for Cincinnati. Look at that, the front seven of the Bengals. They drafted a guy that fell in the draft, Bannup and Andrew Billings, to compete with Petco as the nose tackle. And he also got Geno Atkins. You look at the linebacking corps for Cincinnati, not, you know, talented players, but not really guys that stand out to you, in my opinion. You know, you don't have, it's not really anything special at linebacker. Would the help with the defensive line with Billings and Atkins and Dunlap and Johnson, if he's able to, you know, contribute quite a bit, you know, how important is that defensive line to help out that linebacking corps for, in your eyes, for Cincinnati?
Yeah, you mentioned Geno Atkins, and I'd be hard pressed. And granted, I'm a beat writer here. I see him every day, so I think we're a little colored to the guys we do see every day. We try to watch around the league, but guys, I mean, he was what the players voted him what 25th or 26th best player in the league. He's an All Pro, has been an All Pro in the past before his knee injury a few years ago. Geno Atkins is one of the top two or three defensive linemen, in my opinion, in all of football. This includes ends. This includes the J.J. Watts of the world. I mean, he doesn't get the pub. He doesn't talk. He doesn't like to talk to us. Not a bad guy. He's just not a self-promoter. He's that good. And what he does, he's better than Aaron Donald. You know, Rams fans might get on me for that, but Geno is that kind of a difference maker. So everything starts there. Carlos Dunlap at 13.5 sacks. He's entering his prime. He's a Pro Bowler. Michael Johnson is solid on the other side. He had a double-digit sack year a few years ago, but he's kind of in that, you know, 4-7, 4-8 range, you know. You mentioned Petco and Billings. Bengals fans are kind of tired of Domantas Petco. He's been here over a decade. They'd like to see some competition there, but honestly, guys, Andrew Billings is buried on the depth chart. I mean, maybe he'll get some second-team reps, but they signed veteran Pat Sims to a multi-year, multi-million-dollar deal. They've got two second-year players to really keep an eye out for, and Marcus Hardis and a draft pick from a year ago, and Deshaun Williams, an undrafted selection or signing a year ago, are competing for first-team nickel rush reps next to Atkins. Now, your question about the linebackers – interesting. They run a 4-3. They have a traditional run-stopping middle linebacker in Ray Maluga, which are kind of a dying breed in this NFL. But when he's in shape, he's one of the best at it. Again, not in a limited role, right? A 4-3 base middle linebacker. So he's not going to have hundreds and hundreds of tackles anymore and anything like that. Then we go to the lightning rod. Vontaze Burfict suspended for the first three games. Guys, here's the thing. This defense finished second in the NFL in scoring, 11th overall in yardage. When he came back in week six, so those final 10 games of the year, I think they were a top four, top five team in yardage. They might have been the best scoring defense in the league. He's that big of a difference maker. So he'll probably never go to another Pro Bowl. I mean, his numbers would have to be crazy. He's got such a bad rep at this point. But he matters like that for this team. So if he's there, if Geno's healthy like he was a year ago, this front seven can be really good, even though you're not going to get the sort of splashy stats. You know, Carlos Dunlap had 13.5 sacks. How many people around the league would even know that? You know what I mean? So it's just, they're not a flashy team. Burfict and Adam Jones in the back end kind of get publicity for the wrong reasons in some ways, but they're a very good group. They expect to be one of the top five in the league again. Carlos Dansby, the other linebacker, replacing A.J. Hawk. Dansby's, older, but, unlike A.J. Hawk, is a playmaker. He has sacks, interceptions. He's still decent in coverage. They're hoping that front seven, especially once Burfict returns from suspension, is the core of a top 10 defense. And frankly, they're going to need to be while these receivers and Andy Dalton figure out how to get going again.
Yeah, Jim, you kind of a nice segue into where I wanted to go, and that was in that secondary. And I don't want to say I was surprised that the Bengals went cornerback in the first round. I mean, this is you had alluded to it earlier. This is a league it's now a passing league, and you can never have enough quality cornerbacks. But where does William Jackson fit in as a rookie? That back secondary, I mean, you got two good cornerbacks in Pac-Man and Kirkpatrick. Solid safeties. What's the role for William Jackson this year? Is it going to be kind of a sit back, watch and learn, or is he actually going to get on the field and play?
Yeah, well, unfortunately for William Jackson, I heard it's going to be a combination of things, guys. I mean, he was a depth pick at 20 in the late 20s, kind of like Drake Kirkpatrick was, kind of like Darquez Denard was a few years ago. He wasn't going to play other than special teams as a gunner, which is very important for the Bengals, actually. That's where Kirkpatrick and Denard started their careers, were as gunners, and they were one of the best punt coverage units in the league in those years. Jackson, in their world, he would have eventually got some snaps in, maybe some blowouts, maybe late in games if an injury occurred. Unfortunately, he tore a pectoral muscle in the first game of contact. So he's not done for the year, at least that they don't believe, but he is going to miss an extended chunk. He could be that sort of designated to return type of guy midseason. So in that case, obviously he's going to miss valuable developmental reps, but it's not going to affect, assuming health across the board, guys, he would just sort of walk back into the role he had, which was special teams, the fourth or fifth corner, and that's about it. Now, obviously, he's more talented than that, and if there were to have injuries on the Kirkpatrick and Jones, especially on the outside, I don't know if he quite was ready for the slot nickel position, but he would have been sort of pressed into action there. So they're a little dinged depth wise, but assuming health, kind of what you just said. He was a depth pick and a guy they were just going to kind of develop and bring along as they've done with corners, the last 5-6 years.
I don't know if it's the coaching aspect of it. The Bengals lose Hugh Jackson, who went to Cleveland. They actually just named Robert Griffin III as their starting quarterback. So a big hole at offensive coordinator. They lost Zimmer the year prior to the Vikings. And Lewis has been there since 2003, but he's never won a playoff game in Cincinnati. I guess the question for you, how much more
how much longer do they stick with Marvin Lewis as the head coach before they decide that one and done in the playoffs is not enough? And what impact do you see Hugh Jackson leaving having on the Bengals this year?
Yeah, it's honestly, guys, that's the million-dollar question or multi-million-dollar question asked around this country and especially in Cincinnati. Marvin Lewis's coaching tree is rapidly expanding. Jay Gruden is in Washington, and we kind of laugh about it because not only is his tree expanding, but anyone who seems to coach or catch passes from Andy Dalton seems to get paid, either as head coaches or receivers. So, go figure there. But honestly, we asked owner Mike Brown that exact question. He gets it every year, and he flipped it around and he said, "Why would I fire Marvin Lewis?" I think Mike Brown remembers the 90s when this franchise lost 100 games in that decade. And the way they view it is kind of how we started this conversation was Marvin Lewis gets them to the playoffs, and that's all you can ask for in a way. At some point, the players have to make the plays to win the game. And I understand that coaching matters and timeouts and strategy and all that stuff. But at some point, again, how many times can you knock on the door and finally maybe it opens? And I think Mike Brown feels if Marvin Lewis keeps getting them there, the break is going to go their way at some point. Now, you mentioned the Hugh Jackson leaving. This falls back on what we spoke earlier about Andy Dalton. This is Andy Dalton's offense at this point. Jay Gruden came in with Andy 5 years ago or 6 years ago now. As Jay, it became clear Jay was going to be a head coaching candidate, Hugh Jackson was brought in after Oakland. First, he was a secondaries coach. Then he moved back to the offensive room. He moves up. Ken Zampezi is now the offensive coordinator. He's been Andy Dalton's quarterback coach for 6 years. He's been with Marvin Lewis for 13. So basically, it's continuity, guys. It's the same offense. There's no real changes to what Hugh Jackson did, and he had very few changes to what Jay Gruden did. And why is that? It's the quarterback. You guys know this in Green Bay with Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. Offenses work really well when the quarterback has a firm grasp of it, knows the ins and outs of it. Same thing with the play caller. They have that relationship. What's interesting to see, and again, we won't know it till week one, is Ken Zampezi's play calling personality. We don't know what he's going to like on third and long or third and short, certain game situations. We won't know that because, as you guys know, the preseason is going to be pretty vanilla. But a lot of it's Andy Dalton. Last year, Hugh Jackson got a lot of credit, but Andy got to the point where he, like an Aaron Rodgers or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, had, if he needed to change plays or call different plays or move guys around, he had that freedom, and he continues to have it. So they're putting a lot on the quarterback here, guys. I'll be honest. It's a fair question to ask because it's the second straight OC to get a head coaching job. But I think they feel at this point, Ken Zampezi's earned it. He's ready as a coordinator. But also Andy Dalton is ready in this offense 6 years in to just kind of run it, as he sees fit too.
Yeah, I think you make some great points there, Jim. And I'm going to kind of go to maybe somebody that, just kind of the understudy. And I had read a tweet earlier about Mr. McCarron's backup. In this league, and, you look at it last year when Andy Dalton hurt his thumb, so valuable to have a very good, capable backup. I mean, you can just ask a lot of teams in the NFL when their starter gets hurt, if they don't have somebody to step in and take over that offense. How is A.J. McCarron's progress coming? Is he a viable backup? And is this a guy, as you look, it's Andy Dalton's team, no doubt. Is this a guy that can develop, though, and the Bengals can either deal him before his contract is up, or is this a guy that's just going to kind of waver around, or do you see a future in the NFL for McCarron?
I think it's yes to both questions there. He does have a future, and he is a guy that they're probably going to develop and move in that last year before he's free to leave. you know, it's funny, guys, because when he was drafted injured, he didn't play at all his rookie year, and fans at Cincinnati just wanted, you know, Andy Dalton out and A.J. McCarron in, and then I think last year proved to everybody just how big of a gap there is between the two of them. Now, A.J. McCarron definitely comported himself very well. They won two games. For all intents and purposes, he helped win that playoff game before the Jeremy Hill fumble. But really, guys, there was a drop-off. I mean, this was a top-five offense, and then when he took over, their scoring plummeted, ball movement plummeted. You just can't really expect a backup to come in and do the things at the time an MVP candidate was doing. But here's what people forget. Those were A.J. McCarron's first games in the NFL. I mean, he had played some preseason games, but that was it. So even the Bengals didn't know what they had. And now I would argue that they probably have one of the best quarterback situations in the league because of that. Now, A.J., of course, wants to start at some point, and maybe he's proven he can do that. But look, guys, if teams were going to trade for him this offseason, they were going to have to give up a number one pick for the Bengals to even answer the phone. That didn't happen. That was never offered. There were no discussions. Because I think also what A.J. McCarron showed was while he could help win you some games and manage a game, he didn't really come out and wow you in terms of, you know, he had some good balls, he had some issues. It's just like any kind of rookie quarterback would. So ideally for the Bengals, the guy never sees the field again unless they're in blowout situations. So in that point, you know, they'd want to hold on to him. His value wouldn't really diminish. So you're right. I think it's keep him around. He's a backup. If Andy Dalton gets hurt, they feel confident he can win some games. But once you get to the end of the line, I know he's going to want to move on and get a real shot to start, which at that point you figure they'll trade him for whatever they can get, you know, a year, 2 years down the road.
You know, one last question before we let you go. The show is starting to come to a close, and we want to thank you for coming on. I'm going to kind of go a little old school here. I know you used to work with a publication in Wisconsin on Milwaukee, and I want to get your thought on this. Brett Favre goes into Hall of Fame on Saturday, and we've heard all these stories about Brett Favre's stories. And just want to talk to you about you. You know, do you have a favorite Brett Favre story or moment that you want to quickly share before we let you go?
You know, it's funny, guys. I did cover the Packers. It was in the post-Favre era. You know, so Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback that I was around professionally. I am from Chicago originally, and while I did not grow up a Bears fan, needless to say, the family was. So I saw plenty of Brett Favre, and two things stick out to me. Is one was always I always found it amusing when the Packers played the Bears, and it would be Brett Favre, and then the list of Bears quarterbacks that had started games during his tenure. And here in Cincinnati, the Browns actually have a similar list of guys. And Bernie, it's hilarious. Very sad, but it's funny. And then, of course, honestly, probably the game that I recall the most watching was I want to say it was Dip Butkus's jersey retirement, or maybe it was Mike Singletary's in this driving rainstorm at Soldier Field, and it was just sort of classic Favre. Like I said, I'm not a Bears fan, so I can't remember who they were honoring. It was, you know, some of those old guys, but I do recall that Brett Favre literally raining on their parade along with the weather. And actually, guys, real quick, you know, locally here in Cincinnati, you know, Brett Favre, that was the game. You know, Menominee's own Tim Crumry rolled Don Mikowski's ankle against the Bengals at Lambeau Field in September of 92. And actually just had a fun story up at Cincinnati.com about a lot of those 92 Bengals wondering who Brett Favre was. He was mispronounced coming onto the field. So while I didn't see that game, you know, the NFL back then isn't what it is now with television. It was sort of fun to hear their recollections of this kid from Mississippi who they never heard of coming in and leading that comeback victory. So I would say those three kind of things stick out to me for sure.
Yeah, that certainly, you know, people, you know, the thing there, Jim, is when that trade happened for Brett Favre, this is how I know who the real Packer fans are, because if somebody tells me, yeah, I knew that was a great trade, I just kind of laugh and say, you know what, you're not a Packer fan, because I don't think that city was really too enthused about Ron Wolf giving up draft picks for this kid that had some problems in Atlanta, and who the heck is Brett, like you said, Favre. But, you know, it turned out to be, you know, Ron Wolf and his genius. You got to give the guy credit. But I want to turn it back over to you, Evan. Jim, thanks for joining us. It was very insightful tonight.
Hey, anytime, guys.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on and spending some time with us tonight. Love to have you on once regular season gets going, if we can get it into your schedule. And if you want to let the listeners know really quick before I let you go how they can find your work.
Yeah, Cincinnati.com is the easiest way to find me, but I'm also on Twitter at Jim Ozarski. It's OWCZARSKI. And I do still have very deep ties to Wisconsin. I do pay attention to the Packers, so I'm always willing to engage, as well as any other NFL questions. You can find me on Facebook, too, same spelling. And definitely love the NFL. And like I said, Wisconsin remains part of my home. So, you know, I'm definitely willing to engage in, anything Milwaukee and Wisconsin, for sure.
We'll definitely be chatting then, Jim, you know, as the season goes on. So, again, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime.
Have a good night, Jim.
All right, Evan. Great show tonight. These shows, Evan, every time, it seems like, you know, I was just thinking today, we're going on, I believe, our third year, and the 30 minutes just goes fast, and especially when we have a guest and we're really talking football. But, tomorrow night we're definitely going to touch on what I'll call the NFL fiasco on Sunday with the cancellation of the Hall of Fame game. I think definitely warrants some opinion from you and I on that, and some underlying things that I think also play into this outside of just the cancellation of the game. A couple of things I want to touch on. But tomorrow night, 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central, we thank Jim for coming on tonight to share his insight about the Cincinnati Bengals. For Evan Witalison, I am Troy Otradovic. Fasten your seatbelts. Put your foot on the gas. Evan and I will get back with you tomorrow night, 11 o'clock Eastern, 10 o'clock Central. Have a good night, everyone.